What is up? Hey everyone, Eric Brooker here. I am your host and welcome to episode 60 of Council Culture, a podcast where we take advice from experts on topics of culture and leadership and where we hear their inspirational stories in hopes of motivating us to be better versions of ourselves and leaders in our community. Today's episode is no different. Such a fun story. We'll get into that in a minute, but such a great story on how I met today's guest. If you haven't already, you know the drill. Subscribe, rate, and review. We've had a lot of people that have taken time recently to review. Give us a written review of the show. Thank you so much. If for some reason you don't have the time, just that quick button, just check that 5-star review for us. I would be grateful. Now, on today's episode, Tim Duma joins the show today. We've had a lot of Canadians on our show. That continues today. Tim's tagline, love unconditionally by serving generously while dreaming audaciously to grow purposefully. He is the subject matter expert on leadership. He is John Maxwell certified, McKay CEO Forums certified, Extreme Leadership certified, and Virtuous Leadership certified. I'm so excited to share this conversation with you. This show is dedicated to his journey. This conversation is what we make it. This is Council Culture. Tim Duma, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So this is an interesting one. I normally don't, that's not true. I normally do give some sort of a background on where I've met my guests. You and I actually met for the first time just yesterday, probably this time yesterday. But you emailed me a couple of weeks ago on LinkedIn. You have a great resume relative to your LinkedIn profile, a lot of leadership, coaching and whatnot that we'll get into here in a little bit. You simply asked for some time. And we booked an appointment. I was really excited, yet uncertain of what we were meeting about. And we had such a great conversation yesterday. And that conversation stemmed from a podcast that you listened to, a gentleman by the name of Andy Andrews. The Professional Noticer is the name of the podcast. Andy had me on his show, I think just after he came on my show. And you and I connected simply because you heard me on his show. And now here we are recording on my podcast. What a fun time.
Yeah, it's probably only a week later. I think I listened to that podcast about a week ago. And here we are. And it all stemmed from a great friend of mine named Doug Smith, who has a company called L3 Leadership in Pittsburgh. And I always ask people, you know, how do you connect with people and what do you ask them? He said, Tim, when I talk to people, I always ask them, who do you know that I should know? And he said, when I meet somebody and I think it would be a great connection, I simply go and I ask them, how can I add value to you? And hopefully you'll return the favor to me. But he really impressed that upon me because he had lunch a few years ago with John Maxwell, who were both John Maxwell coaches. And I said, how did you get John Maxwell to have lunch with you? He said, Tim, I simply asked him. I said, you're telling me that you asked John Maxwell to go to lunch? And he said, yep. He said, well, he said yes on the 88th time. And I said, the what?
Wow.
He said the 88th time. He said, it wasn't like he was blowing me off, but things didn't work out. So I just kept telling him, it's my dream to have lunch with you when you're in Pittsburgh. Can you let me know? And I just kept on it. So since that day, just how I met you, I heard you on the podcast. And I said, I love what you're doing, Eric. I'd love to meet you. Let's do it. And you got back to me. Some people do, some people don't, but I cannot tell you how many amazing people I've met simply by asking.
You know, and I don't want to deviate from what this conversation ought to be, and we'll get to the leadership component, but I'll tell you the journey for me in this podcast, I think that what's been so enlightening for me is just that. Now, granted, you didn't have to reach out to me 88 times. I think I hope I responded after the first note. That being said, people that have come on the show from the CEO of Chipotle to the founder of Anytime Fitness to the founder of Reebok to Mike Sievert, who happens to be the CEO at T-Mobile. Now, while he has not come on the show, We've exchanged emails, and one of the greatest qualities of a leader is someone that's willing to take the time to have a meaningful interaction. Mike Sievert is the CEO of T-Mobile and has no reason. In fact, I'm a Verizon customer. He literally has no reason to respond to my LinkedIn note. But it's been such a great journey to have these conversations with wonderful people. And like the founder of Reebok, I simply sent him a note on LinkedIn, told him I caught him on a video that was floating around the internet, and I'd love to have him on my show. And this isn't something that salespeople need to learn. This is something that I think we all need to learn. Because I posted this on LinkedIn maybe 2 weeks, not even 2 weeks ago. The worst thing that happens is that someone just says no. And that's okay.
Yeah. And you know, I pride myself on trying to connect with as many people as possible. Sometimes it takes a day, like it took us, sometimes a week, sometimes it takes a few months, but continuing to connect. And I learned that from a gentleman who's also a leadership coach named Clemens Reddick. And he almost took me aside. This was almost 10 years ago now. And he said to me, he said, "Tim, I have a great connection for you. This person is an artist. They're a painter." And I texted him back and I said, "I'm not looking to buy any art. Why would I meet with a painter?" And it's like he put his arm around me and he said, "Tim, let me help you understand something." He said, "You never know what you might learn from anybody in this world. And I will guarantee you that if you go into every conversation knowing, not hoping, but knowing that you will learn and receive value from every person you meet, you will absolutely do that." So I took that into this conversation with this painter. And do you know what? This painter ended up being one of the greatest connectors, a great business person, and ultimately a great friend, that one of the best that I'd ever met. And I would never have taken that meeting before. But now I realize that there is not a person in the world that I cannot receive value from and I cannot learn from.
I'm normally pretty good about remembering where I heard this, and I know it was from someone on the podcast, but someone in a recent episode talked about reverse mentorship, this idea that generally the CEO has an executive coach, but they don't have someone in middle management or even an individual contributor in sales or operations or accounting or someone within a different company, maybe someone considerably younger than them. We tend to have these older mentors that have been there, done that. This idea of, like you're saying, we can learn something from anybody that we interact with. This idea of having mentors that are considerably younger than us to talk to us about what their generation sees and feels and hears and how they think differently than we do is as valuable as the conversation we have at Starbucks in the morning, as valuable as that executive coach that we hire. I want to take a minute and jump in. We're a podcast dedicated to culture and leadership. And I don't ask this question very often, but I want to know, what is your definition of leadership and how did you come to find this definition?
Well, I came to find this definition from about 18 years ago when I walked into my first meeting with the group of people that I was going to lead. I was fired up and I was ready to be the best leader they had ever seen. So on my drive into work, I practiced my best Vince Lombardi speech, ready to just wow them and awe them and inspire them. And I walked in and you know what? I think I gave a pretty decent speech, but you know what came back? Their eyes were wide, their mouth was open. And all they said back to me is, "Why? Why should I follow you? I've heard this thing before. We've heard this song and dance. Why should I follow you?" And I realized at that moment, as much as I had dedicated myself to learning about leadership and reading books, I had no idea what it meant. So like a good child of the 80s, I opened up the dictionary. This is back when you opened the dictionary, we didn't click on it. So you know what Merriam-Webster said the definition of leadership is? They said it's the act of being a leader. If I was in the third grade and they asked me to define that, I would fail the third grade. However, the best dictionary in the world is telling me this is what it is. So I realized quickly, we don't know what this is. So I went to experts, you know, such as John Maxwell, who talks about leadership being influence. And I looked at what others said was the most important aspect of leadership. I looked at Jack Welch, who is known as Neutron Jack, But he ironically, when asked what the number one aspect of leadership, he said it was generosity. So I knew we were maybe onto something here, but I still struggled to define it. Until about 2 years ago, I met a gentleman and read his book named Alex Havard. He wrote a book called The Power of Magnanimity. Now, if you don't know what that word means, don't feel bad, because I had never heard it in my life before 2 years ago when I met Alex Havard. So I did what I just like what I did with you, Eric. I called him up and said, and he's over in Europe. So I said, hey, can we do a Zoom call? I need to hear about this magnanimity thing. So he said, Tim, it's simple. The definition of magnanimity, or my definition of magnanimity, is the spirit of striving for greatness by bringing out the greatness in others.
Mm.
The spirit of striving for greatness by bringing out the greatness in others. And that was the mic drop for me. Boom. I said, Alex, that's the definition of leadership, because I had always tried to put some kind of sentence together which talked about striving for that yourself, but you really can't get it yourself unless you bring others in and you bring others with you. But I hadn't found a way of describing that, and this described it perfectly. So to this day, one of the goals of my life is to live magnanimously, to strive for greatness myself, but I can only do so when I bring out the greatness in others.
I know that for myself, when we talked about this yesterday, I don't have a dictionary. Of all the books behind me, I don't think there's a dictionary. There is one in the house. I didn't go to the dictionary. I clicked on the dictionary and looked it up myself. One of the things that I think has changed in the world over the last couple of years through COVID is management styles, leadership styles have had to change. So what is a pain point, like a key pain point right now that you see leaders struggling with?
Well, what you hear all the time in the business world right now is you hear about the great resignation. And the great resignation, for those that don't know, is the fact that more people are quitting their jobs in the world, but in the United States alone, than ever have before. So just in the United States in April, 4 million people quit their jobs.
Wow.
And never before in the history of statistics had 4 million people quit their jobs in the United States in 1 month. And if that wasn't bad enough, almost 4 million quit again in May, and almost 4 million quit again in June. And the trend hasn't changed all that much to where we are now in the fall of 2021. And so leaders, business leaders across the globe, and this isn't any different across the globe, are left to say, why is this happening? And how can I combat it? And really, when we look at crises, you know, when we started 2020 and we had this pandemic, we thought, wow, this is the crisis of this generation. But I wonder if the crisis of this generation is actually now what we're going through right now is the great resignation. The fact that 80% of employees say they would leave their job if they felt free to do so, 8 out of 10.
Wow.
And 65% are currently looking for another job. So if you're sitting in a room right now with one person on either side of you, if you're not looking for a new job, they are. And just think about that. The people that you go to work with, 2/3 of them on average are looking for a new job. What does that do to engagement in an organization? And engagement is all about how organizations make themselves great. So as we look at the Great Resignation, 88% of companies across the globe said they have felt the impact of the Great Resignation. So virtually 9 out of 10 organizations have been impacted by this thing that we've struggled to firstly define, and hopefully we've defined it now, but we're struggling on how to get through.
You know, it's interesting to me. I went to lunch earlier today. I went to, I'm just going to call it out. I went to Buffalo Wild Wings with a couple business associates, and believe it or not, they were out of Buffalo Wings. It was a very strange experience. We are still in the throes of the pandemic. And so they use the same excuse that FedEx uses, the same excuse everybody does. We've had COVID-related logistics issues, and the wings just simply didn't show up. Personally, I'm done with this idea of COVID-related logistics issues. I'm done with the idea that just yesterday I could walk into the local Chick-fil-A for the very first time. Now I eat out a lot. Everyone's going to think all I do is eat out. I was in Chick-fil-A yesterday buying dinner for my daughter, who paid for it on her own because she didn't want to eat what we were going to eat. That's a story for another episode. But the restaurant itself was finally open. And I said, hey, why has it just been the drive-through for the last 3 months? And the guy said to me, we haven't had the staff to be able to support dining in a restaurant. There's a part of me that believes we have an opportunity to turn this great resignation into a great opportunity. I believe some people have spent the last year and a half cooped up in their house, thinking about what they set out to do. We've got folks that went and did pre-med and now they're teachers at elementary schools. We've got folks that have psychology degrees that are salespeople, that in the last year and a half, they've realized this is not at all what I set out to do. I'll admit it. I haven't directly said this on my podcast. I'll say it now. I've been in the same industry for over 20 years. And the last year and a half, I have started to recognize I didn't set out to do this. I didn't set out not to do it. I'm mostly happy if I could podcast full time and write my book and do some keynote stuff. Gosh, I guess I'd do it in a heartbeat. So there's a part of me that this great resignation, I think, is really good because people are finding themselves in a new way. But I want to turn the tables. In your opinion, how do we turn this great resignation into a great opportunity?
So in any crisis, great businesses become even better. Good businesses become worse and bad businesses fail, right? If you look at how many of the great organizations in the world, and not just businesses, organizations become great, it's often through difficulty. And so it's through this difficulty that we'll become great. So we have the opportunity now to either feel sorry for ourselves and say, you know what? We just can't get any, staff. We can't get the supplies. We just can't, because there's a great reason for that. And I have a great excuse. It's called the pandemic. And you know what? If ever there was a great excuse, that is it. However, yep. There is never a great excuse. And a great business coach that I know, his name's John Izzo. He's written many books, and he has this quote called the 100-0 principle. And he said, the minute that you start being 100% responsible for everything that happens to you, make 0% excuses, is the minute you go from good to great. The minute you start making 1% excuses and you don't take 100% responsibility, that's the minute you start failing. And so if we just look at it that way, and we look at what the great opportunity, and I love the fact that you called the great resignation the great opportunity. There's another gentleman from a company called the Now of Work named Rocky Ozaki, who talks specifically about why the great resignation is the great opportunity. Because we now have the opportunity as business owners, as business executives, as business leaders, as colleagues in each of these organizations, to take these organizations from good to great and actually start to treat our people with love. Yes, love. In any organization, the greatest attribute that you can give the person beside you is love. And yes, no, you do not need to call HR and fire the person for professing their love to you at work. I always laugh at that, right? Because if I walked into a workplace tomorrow and said to the first person I met, hey, I love you, what's going to happen? The fire alarm's going to go off. HR is going to call. I'm going to get taken out basically with handcuffs on, because we've lost the understanding of what the word love means in our society. And part of the problem is the English language. We only have one word for love, as opposed to the Greek language, where C.S. Lewis talks about the four loves. There's eros, and that's erotic love. That's the reason why we're getting worried about this, right? But there's many other aspects of love. There's agape love, which is unconditional love. There's filial love, which is love between, friends, brother and sister, cousins. And there's storge love, which is, when you say I love pizza, and usually you kind of understand that, right? But if I came to work and said, I love you, Eric, like a brother, like a best friend, like a cousin, how would you feel if you understood that I got your back, that when you screw up, I'm not going to say, hey, look, Eric, we might need to sever our relationship. This isn't working out. This is a business here. We just lost some money. What if we took it and actually built people up and you'd operationalize love? And this was all brought to me by a great friend named Steve Farber, who wrote a book called Love is Just Damn Good Business. And so what if we change that great resignation into the great re-engagement, and we start engaging our people by actually operationalizing love in the workplace? And there are some great, great ways to do that. But the first thing we need to do is understand that the purpose of business and the purpose of an organization is to support and love and support the dreams of the people around us, both the people we work for, the people we work with, and our customers alike.
I want to talk about that a little further. The book, there's a book called The Five Love Languages. I've actually got two copies on my shelf. So if someone wants to send me a note on LinkedIn or email me, I will send them a copy at no charge. It's a great book. The definitions are fantastic. I was first introduced to The Five Love Languages, gosh, by a keynote speaker named Mary Beth Bonacci, who I'm still connected to, probably 20 some odd years ago. I started an episode with John O'Leary a number of months ago, based on his book. And I said, John, this is going to sound awkward to those that have not read your book, but I love you and there is nothing you can do about it. This idea, you talk about loving people and understanding their goals and objectives and helping them see them through. I just went through this at my corporate office. We were just in Portland for our senior leadership team meetings. I think I told you this the other day, yesterday when we spoke. And we were talking at a high level of trying to help promote from within, that the folks that start at the bottom can continue to work their way up. And I paused for just a second. I think we were all in alignment with what I was about to say, but it needs to be spoken. And I think it needs to be spoken at my office as much as it does at yours and anyone listening. My 3 to 5 year roadmap is to write a book, which I'll finish before the end of the year, is to become a keynote speaker where I can do that as a full-time job, work on books, and travel the country speaking on, oddly, not a topic of culture or leadership, but that's a story for another day. I can't do that with the company I'm with today. I have individuals that work for me that have goals and objectives that are bigger than the company that we work for. You, the listeners, have goals and objectives that are bigger than the company that you work for. And that should be okay. And to me, the sign of great leadership is someone that says, Eric, that role is not here with the company that we are with today, but I want to help you get there. So let me know what I can do, what tools you need to be successful, not only while you're here, but in that next role when you become a keynote speaker, in that next role when you become the CEO, in that next role when you become the SVP of operations. Whatever your goals and objectives are, your company should support you regardless of whether or not they benefit from it. I don't know. Would you agree with that? Would you add anything to that?
I couldn't agree more. I was very lucky in my first job out of college was with an accounting firm called Ernst & Young. And when I walked into the firm on the first day, one of the partners sat me down. And he said, we're really happy to have you here. And we were, as firms go, we were a smaller size in our city. We had 200 employees. And so they had 30 new employees on this day, 30 wow. new, you know, straight out of college kids. And he said, about 5% of you will become partners. You know, about 30% will become managers, 20% will become senior managers, et cetera. But so that means at least 2/3 of you won't necessarily move up in our company. But here's what we have to offer you. We're going to help you to get your CPA. We're going to help you make the connections in the business world to be a great CFO or whatever that next step is for you. And we're going to offer you the opportunity to move up with the organization. But just by sheer numbers, there aren't as many opportunities there. But we're going to support you in that. And that never really left me. I wasn't with Ernst & Young for all that long, but it never left me. And so when I went into our family business called Jack's Beer, Wine & Spirits, which are retail stores in our area, I realized that many of the people that work with us are students or they're people that have other aspirations. Now, same thing with us. You could move up to manager and regional manager and into our head office, but there's only a certain number of yeah. jobs there. So I realized that if we don't actually help support them, then they're not going to support us while we're together for those 1, 2, or 3 years, or maybe even less. So there's a great story, and I really realized it when I worked with a woman named Judy. And she was one of our top performers. She ended up being a regional manager for us and one of the most indispensable people in the organization. She came to me one day when we were doing a dream session, and I can define dream sessions for you in a moment, but I asked her about her dreams. And she's really into wine. She said, Tim, I just want to work for a winery and I would love to work in different wine regions around the world. So it didn't take a rocket scientist for me to figure out that that wasn't with us in retail. And so after my heart sank for a moment, I said, Judy, how can I support? And she kind of looked at me. She said, I thought you were going to be mad. I said, well, I would obviously love if you stayed with us. That's the truth. But if your dreams are elsewhere, it is my job to support you to get there. So I said, what's this time frame? She said, I'd love to do this within 18 months. So her and I, we put together a plan on how to, you know, exit within 18 months. But her part in that role was to train the next person to be better than she ever was. And that's exactly what she did. We still have a relationship to this day. I'm actually hoping to meet her when I'm in her area later next month. And she set the company up for great success. And what's the difference is, imagine if she gave the regular 1 month's notice. She showed up and said, hey, Tim, I got a new job. I'm out of here. Well, we would have been ill-prepared as a company. We wouldn't have cultivated a great relationship. She wouldn't be referring other people to us because she said, these people help you achieve your dreams no matter what it is. So we're a much stronger company because of that, even though we help manage people out.
So talk to me about, we're talking a lot about businesses serving their staff, serving the individuals that work there, serving their customers. What's the goal of every business, the purpose of businesses out there today? And from Jack's to my company, Big Leaf, to companies all over the world, if you had to narrow it down and pinpoint it to one thing, what's that goal?
So I think to really, before I answer that directly, to really understand that, I love Stephen Covey's quote where he says, begin with the end in mind. Because often when we're in business, We have budgets to make, we have to make payroll, we have to pay the bank, et cetera. So sometimes we get stuck in focusing on that. But if we begin with the end in mind and we just state, you know, what is the phrase I want it to say on my tombstone? You know, do I want it to say, you know what, Tim always hit budget. He made profit all the
every
time.
Single
and,
month.
Yeah. And you know what? I hope I do. there's nothing wrong with that. But what do I really want? I've never known anyone to say, you know what? I wanted to say he hit his targets every year. I haven't heard that before. But what I really want is for it to say that person loved the people around him and supported them to audaciously achieve their dreams. And so really, when I begin with the end in mind, that is my goal. But how does that relate to the goal of a business? Well, the goal of a business, when you do that, when you support not only your customers, but the people you work with, to achieve their dreams, you're actually achieving the goal of the business, which I think the goal of every business is to create and earn raving fans, both with your customers and with your employees. And Cam Blanchard wrote a book called That, Raving Fans. And yep. Basically the definition of that is simply people that will scream from the mountaintops that you must do business with this organization for the simple reason that they will make your life amazing. You should drive across town, across the country, just to deal with them. If it's a restaurant, bypass 8 other restaurants to get there. If it's a shoe store, forget all of the other ones on your way. You're not doing it from convenience because they are the best to deal with. And that's not just with customers, but with staff as well. So when we start using love in the workplace, when we start supporting people achieve their dreams, they start saying, hey, you should go work with them because they actually care about you. Yes, we have to make a profit. Yes, we'll have to work on our budget, but our actual goal is how can we support you to achieve the dreams that you once never thought possible?
You know, it's fascinating and I don't have any of the data right in front of me, but if anyone wants, I can email that to them. What's so fascinating to me is when you start with the end in mind, when you focus on raving fans, when you focus on your staff loving the workplace, and when you focus on your customers loving the experience. For me, the first company that comes to mind is Nordstrom's. I've talked about Nordstrom's related stories over the years on this podcast. But what's fascinating to me is the bottom line increases. People work a little bit harder. Customers go out of their way. Nordstrom's is a great example. I don't have a Nordstrom's within 15 miles, but if I need a new pair of dress shoes, I'm going to go to Nordstrom's. I'm going to pass to your example 8 other shoe stores to go to Nordstrom's because of the experience I had. So their cost is down. They don't need a retail outlet in every store or in every city. Their staff is absolutely incredible. These people love to go to work. It's just a retail job that most people, you're in retail, that most people don't stay in for 6 to 12 months or longer. And yet these are folks that have been there 5, 10, 15 years because they care for their employees, and their employees then in turn care for their customers. And the bottom line goes up. Everybody makes more money. So in the end, you're doing yourself a service by caring well, loving your staff, loving your customers. I want to shift gears. We've got a couple more minutes. Your grandfather, when we talked yesterday, you talked about your grandfather teaching you about the 3 F's. I think we'd be remiss if we ended the show without first addressing that.
Sure. So my grandfather was a great influence in my life. And I have many great loves in my life. And one of them, which he helped me get was first football. So he was the team doctor. Doctor was his profession. And he was a team doctor for about 40 years for our local professional team, the BC Lions here in Vancouver. They play in the Canadian Football League. And when I was 5 years old, I wasn't really into football at the time, but I was watching their game because I wanted to see my grandfather on TV. So this player gets injured and I see my grandfather jog out onto the field, helps this guy up. And from that day forward, I was in love with football. So a few years later, he realized when I was falling in love with football, and that was a big part of my life, really the biggest part of my life. He said, Tim, he called me Timmy. He said, Timmy, he said, never forget this. You have a great love of football, but there's 3 F's that are important in your life, and never let them get out of order. He said, the most important thing in your life is your faith. The second most important thing is your family. And the third is football. And you can certainly love all of them, but never forget that order. And if I leave anything with you, I hope it's that.
So I've got to ask you, we're talking football. It's football season. I'm a college fan. I'm an Ohio State Buckeye, an ASU fan. I am a pro football fan. I'm a Cleveland Brown fan. Let's talk to our audience as a whole, is mostly in the U.S. What is your favorite NFL team?
The Seattle Seahawks. And for the last decade, that's been amazing. And this year, unfortunately, we're not doing as well as we'd hope. But my story about the Seahawks is before I had kids, I had season tickets to the Seahawks. And I would drive down. It's about a 3-hour drive from Vancouver to Seattle. And I wouldn't go to quite every game, but I'd share them around with some friends. I go to a few games a year. And as my kids started to get older, I realized this is going to be more and more difficult. So I gave up my tickets the year before the Seahawks drafted Russell Wilson.
killer.
So I haven't been to nearly as many games since, but our family are still big Seahawks fans.
All right. So 2 final questions. The last one, I'll save the easiest one for last. This is one I've started asking everybody that's on the show. Tim, you do a lot of media. You do a lot of keynote speeches. You do a lot of presentations. You are subsequently asked an awful lot of questions. What is one question that you are not asked that you wish people would ask you?
Wow. That's a great question. I think what we're often not asked is, you know, what is your personal purpose? Mm. And when I coach people, I ask people that. And do you know that I would say 90%+ of companies that I work with all have a mission statement, vision statement, or a purpose statement. But when I ask people that, what are your values? What's your purpose? You know, most individuals don't have that. I would say barely 10%, if that. And so if anyone were to ask me, I would love for them more to ask, what's your purpose? What's your personal mission? And I've developed my personal mission to be this: to love unconditionally by serving generously while dreaming audaciously to grow purposefully. And hopefully that will lead me to a magnanimous life and will lead the people around me to live magnanimously as well.
Full circle. I'm going to add something that I learned from our guest, Andre Norman, a few months ago. Andre
has an incredible story. He was sentenced to 104 years in prison, got out after 14. A, read the book. B, listen to the podcast. But in getting out of prison, he built himself a board of directors, a personal board of directors. So I agree with you, the importance of having a personal mission statement. He had a board of directors, some folks that regularly would hold him accountable to goals and objectives. And I think both ideas are very important. Last question. This is the easy one. People want to hear more. They want to learn more about you. They want to learn more about your work. Where can they find you?
Absolutely. My coaching company is called Service Leadership, S-E-R-V-U-S. You can find me on my website at serviceleadership.com, S-E-R-V-U-S. Service is actually the word servant in Latin. And that's how I came up with the name. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Tim Dumas, D-U-M-A-S. There's three ways that we could work together. Number one, I do one-on-one coaching. Number two, I do peer group coaching, primarily with an organization called McKay CEO Forums. And I do business and conference keynotes or lunch and learns within businesses.
All right, I'm gonna ask a bonus question. You're giving your favorite keynote speech. Someone says, hey, we wanna hire you. We wanna fly you to Boston to give a keynote speech to our audience. What is the presentation about? Your pick. What are you presenting on?
Yeah, the presentation is simple. It's putting love into your workplace by dreaming audaciously. So when we ask the question of our people, if you knew you couldn't fail, what would you achieve? And how can I support you? That's when organizational greatness, great engagement comes into play. And that question was asked to me. I've never heard that question before stated in that way. It was asked by one of my mentors named Nancy McKay, the founder of McKay CEO Forum. She said, Tim, if you knew you couldn't fail, I'd had other people up before asking me about my goals and dreams, but she said, no, if you knew you wouldn't fail, what would you do? And that question has been so inspirational, not only for me, but people around me, because they start thinking differently. When you just ask about someone's goals, they kind of regurgitate, you know, well, I'd like to be manager. I'd like to move on to the next step. But when you actually ask about your dreams and you say, no, if you know you couldn't fail, what would you do? The creativity is opened and it is amazing. So I would love to speak, love, pardon the pun, on love and how to put that into practice in your organization with dreams.
If you knew you couldn't fail, we talked about this yesterday, Tim. One of my all-time favorite books, and certainly one of my top five of the year, is a book called Chasing Failure by a gentleman named Ryan Leake. He's been on the show. What was so fascinating is if you knew you couldn't fail and you tried it anyway, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that happens is that you fail, but that you learn from it and you are a better person because you have learned from it. Tim Dumas, it was an absolute pleasure meeting you yesterday. It was a joy to have you on the show today. I look forward to a continued relationship. All my best to you and yours.
So grateful to be here, Eric. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Council Culture today. If you like the show, please consider sharing it with a friend. Please take a moment to also rate and review this episode. You can always find us on social media and feel free to email me directly at eb@ericbrooker.com. Leadership is a choice. And culture is contagious. Thank you for listening to this episode of Council Culture.